This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. On Monday, President Trump announced he's reducing the size of two national monuments in Utah, Bears Ears National Monument and Grand Staircase Escalante. This is the largest rollback of federal land protection in the nation's history. Here's President Trump in the Utah State Capitol making that announcement.
People think that the natural resources of Utah should be controlled by a small handful of very distant bureaucrats located in Washington. And guess what? They're wrong.
John Ruppel is an associate professor of law and a fellow at the Wallace Stegner Center for Land Resources and the Environment at the University of Utah. He's also a plaintiff in one of the legal challenges against the president's proclamation as part of his role on the board of directors of the Friends of Cedar Mesa. John, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. It's a pleasure to be here.
So on a practical level, when national monument protections are taken off of, say, an acre of land, it becomes just a different category of federal land. What changes for that acre?
The protections or the management requirements associated with that land revert back to those that were in place prior to the designation of the monument. Most significantly, when lands are set aside as a national monument, the president withdraws those lands from availability from disposal under federal land laws and from availability from for leasing for oil and gas development or for availability for future mining claims. Now, existing claims are protected, but future ones are no longer allowed. So when the president cut 85% from Bears Ears, those lands that are excised from the monument are now potentially available for oil and gas development. That's the most significant change, but there are also a number of other changes to day-to-day management. It could also potentially affect funding for monument operations as well.
And there'd been a fairly recent expansion of Bears Ears under President Obama that I think it's fair to say, controversial. There are people who liked it in Utah. There are people who didn't. I mean, did President Obama go too far in expanding Bears Ears?
Well, Rob, you're correct in that the monument was set aside less than a year ago. President Obama set it aside on December 28th, so it's been around for less than a year. Did he go too far? You know, that's a matter of opinion. But I think it's important to understand how the monument came about. There's been talk of protecting lands in southeastern Utah going back to at least the 1930s. Within the last, I'm going to guess, about 7 years ago, the tribes that claim southeastern Utah as kind of their home, they came together and started developing a proposal to protect those lands. They tried to work with Utah's congressional delegation to move that proposal forward, but that was ineffective. And essentially, they drew about a 1.9 million acre boundary based on interviews with tribal elders and cultural leaders and their understanding of the way that landscape was used. That proposal went to President Obama. President Obama then made a decision that based on other competing values, energy development, uranium development, other resources, he was going to trim that area back to about 1.3 million when he designated the monument. So what he set aside was actually quite a bit smaller than what the first inhabitants of that region and the proponents of that monument were pushing forward.
Can you talk about what is in the land that had this monument protection and would have that withdrawn by President Trump? What kind of features, what kind of significant sites are there?
Well, this is an incredibly rich cultural landscape. Native American use of this region goes back over 13,000 years, and the congressionally chartered National Trust for Historic Preservation described the area in its comments on the protection by saying that perhaps nowhere in the United States are so many well-preserved cultural resources found within such a striking and relatively undeveloped natural landscape. So it's really a remarkable place in terms of the archaeology, the cultural values, and the nature that is there.
And now, as we mentioned, you're on the board of directors of the Friends of Cedar Mesa, which is filing suit against President Trump. A lot of groups, Native groups, some businesses, environmental groups are filing suit. What are the grounds for the lawsuits trying to stop President Trump cutting back on the size of these monuments?
There are a number of arguments that are being made, but at the center, I think the most important argument to understand has to do with the president's authority to do this. Now, The president cannot act without a clear base of authority, and that can come from either of two places. It can come from the U.S. Constitution, or it can come from a statute that was passed by Congress. If we look at the Constitution, it provides to Congress, and to Congress exclusively, the power over public lands. So the president doesn't have any inherent authority there. Congress did delegate the power to create national monuments when they passed the Antiquities Act of 1906, 111 years ago. But the Antiquities Act doesn't discuss the power's ability to reduce national monuments. And earlier this year, 121 law professors from around the country sent a letter to the administration saying that we don't believe that the president has the authority to eliminate lands within a national monument. Now, the counterargument to that is that presidents have indeed reduced monuments in the past. Congress hasn't objected to that, and that lack of objection, at least in the minds of some, creates an understanding that that power exists in the president. But the problem with that argument is, first of all, it's been over 54 years since the president last reduced a national monument. Those prior reductions have never involved the kind of scope and drastic reductions we saw earlier this week, and they've never been done for these kind of naked political reasons. Besides that, Congress in 1976 passed comprehensive public land legislation, reining in the president's implied power over public lands and exerting its own power. So we think there's a very, very strong legal argument here that the president went too far in really cutting to the heart of both Bears Ears and the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument.
We're talking to John Ruppel, Associate Professor of Law at the University of Utah, looking at President Trump's announcement that he would reduce the size of national monuments in Utah, including Bears Ears. There are legal challenges in the works. John is part of a group that is doing one of those challenges himself. John, one of the fundamental arguments here in Utah and a lot of other southwestern and western states is that the federal government owns a lot of land and in some cases has heavy protections over it, especially in cases of national parks and national monuments, and that ultimately is a damper on the economies of those states. Is that a valid argument?
Well, I think part of that is correct. If you look at a state like Utah, it's correct to say that about two-thirds of the land within the state is federally owned, so that we're talking about lands here that belong to all Americans and lands to which I think all Americans have a legitimate claim to those interests that are contained in them. As far as the economic impact, monuments can have a very positive impact on the local economy. If we look at Utah again, we have five national parks. Four of those, Arches, Bryce Canyon, Capitol Reef, and Zion, all started out as national monuments before Congress said these places are really special and need to be elevated in terms of their protection. Now, if we go back to 2014, the most recent year I have data for, we look at those four parks and we see together that they generated over about 6.7 million visitor days. That generated about $500 million in visitor spending and created about 7,500 jobs. So that's a really positive impact. If we look closer to the Grand Staircase, if we look at the two counties that surround that, we see that personal income, per capita income, employment, and population have all increased since that monument was set aside. So it's difficult to make this argument, or at least substantiate it factually, that monuments are somehow devastating local economies.
Now, we're talking to you from Wisconsin. We have public land here, but not to the extent that you would in a state like Utah. You're on one side of this argument, but is this something that you see as bitterly dividing people in your state?
You know, when we talk about public lands, particularly in a state like Utah, again, we have about two-thirds of our land is federally managed. That requires federal land managers to balance a lot of competing interests, everything from oil and gas development, mining, off-road vehicle use, hunting, to wilderness preservation and archaeological protection. And that balance is very difficult. Well, all of us agree that the federal government has to strike a balance. It's very difficult finding a balance that is agreed upon by all. And I think that's really the heart of this debate. There are some folks that feel, one, that balance wasn't struck in the way that they wanted. And I think there's some other folks out there that would argue that they didn't have enough of a voice in some of those decisions. That, again, doesn't really hold up when we look at the process that was used to generate the monument, but that's another story.
Is this a problem that Congress could make a difference in, maybe by updating or revising the Antiquities Act?
Well, Congress has plenary power over public lands. They have the ability to come in tomorrow, pass legislation that ratifies both Bears Ears and the Grand Staircase, as proclaimed by Presidents Obama and Clinton, and set make those boundaries permanent. They also have the ability to do away with those monuments entirely or adjust the boundaries. If they do that, or if they propose that kind of legislation, then we have an opportunity as a public to engage through the democratic process and discuss the pros and cons of that. So that's one possibility. They could also, Congress, when I say them, I mean Congress. Congress could step in and amend the Antiquities Act to change the process by which future national monuments are set aside. And frankly, those are big-scale policy decisions that probably need to occur in the halls of Congress, where we can have that democratic process, where people can weigh in more broadly rather than have it done through presidential fiat under what are at best kind of questionable legal authority.
And in practice, this is going to end up in the courts. Do you have any sense of a timeline for when this is going to start actually becoming a court case?
I can only speculate. As you mentioned, I'm on the board of directors for Friends of Cedar Mesa. We are a plaintiff. We are being represented by outside counsel. We've been generously represented by Hogan Lovells. And, I'm not the attorney of record on this, so I can't speculate about what that process would be going forward. I think it's going to be a long and complicated battle, particularly if we start looking beyond a single monument like Bears Ears and we start looking at multiple monuments. And as your listeners are probably aware, Secretary Zinke has recommended reductions to a number of monuments above and beyond what we saw earlier this week with Bears Ears and the Grand Staircase.
John, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thank you, Rob. Have a great weekend.
That's John Ruppel, Associate Professor of Law and a fellow at the Wallace Stegner Center for Land Resources and the Environment at the University of Utah. He's also a part of a group that's a plaintiff in the case against President Trump's decision to shrink two national monuments.